Hello, everyone. I am thrilled to have Jennifer Yanolo here with us today. Now, I can't really call you a business coach, or can I? It started that way, but we're going to move into the other areas as well. But I'm going to start off by saying something to you so we can sort of interject what it means now. Right now in America, there are 59,330 business coaches. Can you imagine? Okay. Okay. Which, by the way, leads to a conversation about differential and how do I differentiate? Yeah. Now, what's also interesting is in 1950, there were less than 100.
Right.
Before we get into all about you, do you think the reason for this incredibly rich industry at present is because women started to go into the marketplace running their own shows? What do you account for that in 1950 there were less than 100 and now there are 59,000?
You know, I never really thought about it through that lens. I think that with the rise of self-help really came this whole idea of having a coach for everything. It's really interesting. When I started coaching a decade ago, I was probably in a small group. Right now, everybody has a coach, is a coach, has an Instagram about coaching.
Is thinking about being a coach. I mean, yes, it's absolutely true.
It's kind of insane. And I think some of it came from the gig economy, right? It's like, and I wonder if it's the new version of if you can't do teach, I don't know. But it's really interesting. I actually, a lot of times, will give people advice about how to find a good coach and what that looks like and what questions you should ask and make sure they actually have experience in the area they're talking about. If it's someone who's trying to coach you to have a startup, have they had one? Because there's an intimate understanding needed for those kinds of things. And also, life coaching is one aspect of it. There are lots of flavors, I guess, of coaching.
Well, I was thinking about it too. And I was thinking about if, and I do have a coach that I worked with for about a year, and I've now sort of laid off that for now. But I think what I did was I assessed myself first to say, what are my needs? And then I tried to fill my needs with someone who appeared to me through their Instagram account. Are you serious? Appeared to me to have the skill set that I felt I was lacking. So it calls in my mind to really pick the right coach. Yes. I remember everybody went into therapy in the 70s, long before you were probably even around. But and what we would do is you got your therapist from a friend. Everything was through recommendation. Yep. My friend, oh my God, you're doing so well. You got to go to my therapist, you know? And it's the same kind of thing. I think there's a lot of referral out there, but now when I look at it and I look at some of my friends who are being coached and I'll say, how did you find them? Well, what's the skill? You know, and I ask about that. I'm not sure that somebody shouldn't or could do a really good business in terms of saying, answer these 10 questions and we'll tell you the kind of coach you need. But
yeah, coachfinder.com.
Exactly. It's a conversation for another time. But I read through a lot. I read through your blog. I have a deep understanding, I believe, of your philosophy, et cetera. Now, one of the things you talk about, and we're going to go into this, is you said that after coaching thousands of women changing the world, from tech founders and UN executives to Hollywood CEOs and social impact leaders, you said, I've seen some clear patterns emerge. And I have to ask what those clear patterns are, because when I compare a tech founder and a Hollywood CEO, I think they have absolutely zero in common. So what common denominators can you give us in terms of patterns that you saw emerging?
The reason for me doing the deep dive was when I saw that from country to country, it was really not dependent on social strata, type of company, type of woman. There was always this conversation about things like, do I have permission to do this? Am I the person to do this? Am I qualified? And I found that these were pervasive. And I thought, this is a really interesting thing to look at, because even the most successful CEOs I've met have those moments where they're not really sure of themselves. And I thought, what is it that we are either handed or wired with that we have these internal scripts that run no matter what we do, no matter how empowered we are?
Or how successful we are.
Exactly. And frankly, the more successful sometimes, the deeper those questions like, how did I get here? And then you have imposter syndrome and all those things. So it really led me on this global quest to find out why. The why isn't really important. The why is because planet Earth. but it's more about how do we dismantle these scripts and kind of recode ourselves to be able to be our own source of empowerment. So that's kind of the what kicked off the journey.
It reminds me of Oprah tells a story that she interviewed, I think, more than 50,000 people during her 30-year career on Oprah. And she said what shocked her was that at the end of each interview, no matter who it was, she said from Barack Obama to Beyonce, they all turned to her at the end and said, "Did I do okay?"
There you go.
And she said, for her, it was sort of like, "You're kidding, right?" You know, more importantly, did I do okay? You know, I'm interviewing Barack Obama and he wants to know if he did okay. Is there something maybe in our core sensitivity or our soul, Jennifer, that asks that question? I mean, is it bigger than just the voice in your head from your parents' past, you know?
And that's what I mean about it was really independent of education, social strata, economics, all of that. It was a human question. Mm-hmm. And what fascinates me are human beings and how they tick. And so I thought, ooh, what is driving this? So I don't know if I'll ever answer the question, but it's a hell of an interesting journey to find out what's driving all of that.
It is, which leads us to out of that, the genesis that came out of that was self-directed empowerment. Yeah. Walk us through what that means. Now, when I first read self-directed empowerment, I was like, I'm all in. First of all, I'm the most entertaining person I know. There's nobody I'd rather be with than me. And sometimes I'd rather be with me and you not be there. In other words, I don't have any problem with that.
I totally get it.
So the idea of self-directed empowerment, is it as sexy for someone who's an introvert as it sounds?
Yeah. I mean, I'm an introvert. And it's one of those questions that came out of all talking to all of these women was I kept hearing this conversation about, we're going to go and empower women in India. We're going to empower women in business. And so I started thinking about this. I'm like, well, that implies that we're giving empowerment to someone, right? We're going to come in and empower you. So if I'm the one giving you the empowerment, that means I'm also the one who can take it away, right? And that's why we see so many charities wreak havoc, right? They'll go into a developing economy, we're going to fix everything, and then we're going to walk away. And what they've left behind is there's no self-directed empowerment available. It's though they took the empowerment with them. So I wanted to create a world where it becomes like a renewable source of energy. You are your own source of empowerment, no matter what's facing you, and you're kind of like your own solar panel, if you will.
So give me an example.
Sure. So, I mean, in business in particular, in the world of entrepreneurship, any given day, things can fall apart. And it's a matter of, you know, if you want to crawl in bed and stay there for the day, who's going to pull you out of that? Nobody. No one's coming to do that. It's you. And, you know, that came from my own autoimmune meltdown in the middle of my entrepreneurial journey where my entire world collapsed. And I had a moment where I had to say, okay, well, you can lie here all day or you can find something else, find another path, pick yourself up, dust yourself off in a kind way, not in a, I'm going to muscle through. And I think that's the other piece of it. It's not just about muscling through. It's about self-care. It's about nurturing yourself. And so with self-directed empowerment, we've really looked at 360 degrees of being a human being and how that affects you and your team and the world and how we recode that conversation internally. And that's what we've been doing. It started with the Concordia Project discussions that I had many years ago and is now present in the Imperia Incubator that we created for women.
Right. And we're going to talk about the Imperia Incubator later. But what comes to my mind when you're talking about that is the women of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Okay. The women of Afghanistan 20 years ago when we went in and blew up Afghanistan, the women of Afghanistan who had been, I mean, right out of the Handmaid's Tale horror story, only worse because anybody could rape anybody. I mean, it was just even worse. Okay. Mm-hmm. And 20 years later, a lot of those women were empowered by America that came in. They were, you know, it's exactly sort of as you're describing that if you give empowerment, then that assumes that you can take it away. Mm-hmm. Okay, so these women are now running things. They have schools. They're being educated. All these things took place over the last 20 years. Okay, we're leaving Afghanistan. I have to note that it's interesting because of the 47 people at the table to negotiate the exit of America from both the Afghan side and the American side, there were only 6 that were women.
I'm surprised it was that high.
I hear you. And unfortunately, what that means is the real women's issues and what they needed in this exit strategy did not take place. So already the schools have been closed. Women have been told you can't show your face again. It's all falling apart. If I were to bring you into Afghanistan underground, what would you say to these women?
Well, I mean, we have members in the incubator from Afghanistan who are fighting for girls' education. And it's a bit of a tightrope. You know, they have to be very careful about what they say and where they say it. And so I don't want to say too much about that. But, you know, it's the kind of thing where I've had to think a lot about this. There are areas of the world that we go into where we are definitely not welcome. And there are more areas we'll go into where we absolutely will not be welcome. And I think it's a matter of creating a global community where a woman can look somewhere to see a reflection of herself in that moment. Because we've even had members from Syria who've literally lived on the front lines. And it's just the connection sustains them. So it's not that we're giving empowerment, but we're providing a community where they can look to see that they're not alone. So I think that's really more about them knowing that they're not this isolated person somewhere in the middle of chaos, that there are other women out in the world. It may not be in their country, but there's somebody who's got their back, and that helps them keep on trucking for another day. And that's directly from feedback that we've had where women have said, I wish I had something like this a couple of years ago when I was going through hell. So yeah, so it's a matter of kind of the fabric of a community.
Well, the strategic mantra of my company, Blue Shoe Strategy, is always you have to show somebody a mirror of themselves and a window into that which they aspire to be. And if you do both those things, then you have them at hello, generally.
Yeah.
So I think that's really true. And I think that's really interesting. But just walk us through it for a minute or two, the Concordia project that was part of the genesis for all this as well.
Sure. So that was the initial exploratory discussions that I decided to kick off because, again, I was traveling for the U.S. State Department. I do a lot of speaking around the world. And I was meeting with college-aged women a lot. And so I was getting questions about, I need to talk to my family about going to school. And, you know, my father's giving me a hard time. So I thought, let me pull together some young women from around the world and let's see what they have to say. So our first conversation had about, I think, women from about 7 countries. And it was the kind of thing where we asked them, what's on your mind? And we had this really interesting moment that was forever burned into my memory because there's this young woman from Mexico who said, I'm going to be president of Mexico one day. And I said, I believe you. And she said, but my father and my family are giving me a very hard time because that's not the safest profession in Mexico. There's a lot involved in that. And so I don't really know what to say to them. And then much to my surprise, there was a young woman from Nepal who said, you know what? I'm having the same kind of conversations with my family and I don't really know what to say to them either. And so here we saw that from 2 sides of the planet, these young women were in that same conversation about, I want to create a future for myself, but I'm not sure what the words are. And so in that moment, all those young women got to see that they were more alike than different. And it was this really big aha moment where I realized I wanted to create a large global project for women who were up to something.
Wow, that's actually amazing. Okay, fast forward a few years, we take the genesis of self-directed empowerment. And are there certain tenets? Are there a few things you can throw our way during this podcast that would help me to find self-empowerment?
Yeah, I'm working on the larger book for that. But briefly, it's really about creating a sense of alignment within and without, right? So it starts with aligning yourself. Are you pursuing the goals and values that really matter to you? There are things to check in about this, about your confidence. One of the things that we found with this pilot cohort that we did with Imperia was that confidence 100% of them had more confidence at the end than at the beginning. So it really starts with that in terms of mentorship and do you have a reflection to look at? And then we look at the way that they connect. So it's a series of concentric circles. It's three circles where first we're building the inside, your confidence, your connections, your ability to adapt and be agile and thrive, and then measuring your impacts. Are you taking care of yourself? Because that's going to translate. So we build the core of the woman, and then we look at how that impacts her immediate team for her project. And then we look at the long-term implications of how does that affect the world at large. So when a woman is applying to be part of the incubator, we ask her, do you have an idea that can impact 100 people? Right? So we're looking at what she's trying to do. And then we build slowly and outward so that over time, that will affect millions of people over, you know, the next 50 years of this.
Well, it's amazing. Amazing. Okay. I have come to believe after being involved in politics, our company has done a lot of work in terms of marketing. We did Barack Obama's social media for 2008, Mayor Bloomberg. I did a white paper for him on people in the South. We do a lot of work with politicians. And what I've come to realize is that the country's a mess and that really the only person who can save it is the huddled masses yearning to breathe free, meaning each and every American, if we start behaving the way we should be remembered, then it doesn't matter what the top's doing. They'll be gone, all of them. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. It's really not about Democrat, Republic. It's about us taking responsibility for our vote and for following and educating ourselves and all of these things that will take place. So when I read through what you're doing around Imperia Global, I thought to myself, not only do all politics start locally, but I'm believing more and more that the less global we are and the more local we are, the more impact we're going to have globally, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It does make sense.
Okay, so with that, how then do you build a network, a global network, where someone like me can help a woman in Afghanistan when the cultural needs of that woman to build whatever she needs to build are so far beyond recognition to my life that I won't really be able to do that? How can you do that? How can you mingle those two things? Because it's so relevant. My experience, and one of the things Americans do that is wrong, is we believe our experience should be everybody's experience.
I know.
But let's not even go there. Let's just talk about how then do you build a global network when everything really, in my opinion, not to be confused with the truth, but in my opinion, should be local.
Well, you know, for me, it comes back to that whole, what does it mean to be human piece? Because yes, the political pieces, sure, those are specific to a region, but being a woman on planet Earth has a common denominator in a lot of ways. So the way that we approached this was because every woman who comes into the program has a mentor. And we ask her, what are the skills? Where is the gap? Where do you need to be developed? And then we match her with a mentor based on that. So we are actually working with people to transcend whatever your country is, whatever your politics are. We're talking about changing the world, right? And we're talking about what it looks like to be a woman doing that. And that's pretty similar in a lot of places because though it may look like a country is very evolved, there is a lot of that that is smoke and mirrors. And I mean, I have a great example from Nepal where I was touring the country with the State Department, doing a lot of workshops and things like that, talking to women entrepreneurs. They were very proud of the fact that they, for the first time in history, had a woman president. Now, the asterisk here is that she was mandated, right? So it's mandated in law that they need to have a woman president. And it is mandated that 1/3 of their Congress be women. So I thought, well, this is interesting. Let's find out what this really means to them. So when we came back, we did a survey of 600 young people in Nepal. And we asked them, who are your female role models? Because we wanted to see now, because we know in America, if a woman runs for president, she is a massive role model, right? There are a lot of young women looking up to her. So we thought that should be reflected in their responses if that's really the case. Well, out of those 600 young people, 0.03% listed her the president as a role model. The rest of them were all about their aunties, their local politicians or leaders, business leaders, things like that. And we also found out that when those women in Congress would stand up to advocate for something, they were often jeered and told to sit down. So all of that quote unquote female power that was created was not real. So it's hard to tell what's actually making a difference because from the outside, it looks really great that they have a woman president, but it means nothing.
When you look at the numbers, when Hillary was running in 16, she lost because of women.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But very young women tended to look up to her, right? At least it resonated.
But in the end, the numbers prove that she lost because of women mostly. Who, mm-hmm. And all I could think of is, as a woman, you can't be serious. Like when you compare the two, just from a female perspective. Mm-hmm. Now, by the way, I wasn't a huge Hillary supporter and many of my friends weren't. It's mm-hmm. not about that. It's about how, again, talk about a window into that which I aspire to be or a mirror. Certainly Donald Trump gave me neither of those two things. No, absolutely not. But then also I interviewed someone last week who wrote this amazing book on Ethel Rosenberg. Go to our podcast and look it up, Ann Seba. And it turns out, Ethel Rosenberg, by the way, was not a spy.
Mm.
And the United States government used her to try to get Julius to turn in names. And when it didn't work, they doubled down. Hoover could not admit that he had been wrong. So she basically fried for that reason. Mm. Okay. Interestingly enough, they told her, don't smile in court, dress frumpily. And they made her out to be this terrible mother. And women in America hated her.
Mm.
And more women than men. I mean, men were not all that interested. Okay, when they put together the jury, the defense, as in her lawyers, didn't want women on the jury because they were sure that they would vote against her.
Interesting.
And all I could think of is there is this piece historically in women that have not been helpful to other women. Maybe it was because if you go back to caveman times, we each had a plot of land and we hoped the guy showed up on our plot rather than the
right.
lady next door.
I don't know.
Like you can take it all the way back there, Jennifer, but walk me through that. Do you think that's changed?
Well, I think we have to change it, right? So with what we're doing, we consciously say it like, listen, the world has set up this conversation called women compete with each other. Let's change it. Let's make this a collaborative environment. So we've eliminated that conversation in our community where it really is about supporting each other, helping each other, championing each other. Because if we as women don't change that conversation, it will not change. Because it doesn't serve those who wish to see us disempowered to have us be empowered.
Okay, but let's take that one step further. I've never been a Sheryl Sandberg supporter.
Mm, ditto.
You know, she wrote a book called Lean In. And at the time when she's saying make room for other women at the table, there was one other woman on the board of Facebook with her and she was head of personnel, which is always on the board, but not really, because all they're called upon to do is answer personnel issues. To me, she's been a fraud from day one. And now as it's exposed more and more, it's not surprising to me in any way. But women, you attack. When her book came out, I wrote a negative review of it. I was the mm-hmm. only one I knew. And I was trashed. I was trashed on LinkedIn.
Emails. I was right there with you, though.
I didn't see it out there.
I was busy.
Okay. Yeah. But a lot of people felt the way I did and didn't say anything. Because there is that mob mentality of women that you have to be a certain kind of feminist if you're going to sit on the left side of the norm here. I think one of the things we have to do as women, and I hope you agree, and if not, I can't wait to hear why, is we have to stop having an expectation that we all have to think the same thing about any issue.
Oh, God, yes. And it's interesting that you bring that particular example up because one of the things I've been saying a lot lately is that we keep hearing these conversations about fighting for seats at the table. I'm like, why are we fighting for seats at this table? It wasn't made for us. We don't control access to the damn thing. And someone has to grant us permission to be there. So we need to build a whole new table in a different building if we're actually going to change anything.
That's great. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm tired of fighting for seats at that table.
Which also is just yet another example of why entrepreneurialism is so very important to our future, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. The smaller the company, the better options we have in terms of taking to a next level. Okay. So if someone wants to take a longer look at Imperia Global. You can go to imperia.global and you can read all about it. What kind of women are you looking for to participate in this global exchange? I love the idea of everyone gets a mentor. There's so much around that that's sort of cool. And I love the idea that it's matched, et cetera. I'm not so sure I want to think about my future in terms of what thing am I going to do that's going to affect 100 people. I sort of, I don't know that I need to have that parameter to be successful, but
no, you don't.
Aside from all that, what kind of women do you want to go here and look at this? And what is your expectation for what we would be providing if we participated?
Well, so one of the things that we learned last year that's really important is there are two kinds of women that we're talking to. And this came out of our conversations in this pilot program. There are the women who want to change the world. And that's in sort of that ambiguous, like what you're talking about. Maybe it's not for this 100 people, but you want to make a difference in your lifetime. What does that look like? So that is more of a 40,000 foot conversation about you and who you are internally and how that aligns with the world outside, right? So that's one conversation. Then there's another conversation for women who specifically create companies or projects that have a mission to execute XYZ, right? And impact at least 100 people. So we are now creating a much broader program where there will be a public-facing program at large for things like, I want to change the world. I need to work on me a little bit. How do I do that? And then the incubator will be more for those specific business ideas. And then we're building an accelerator for a few years from now. So it will be this process of, if you are a woman who wants to change the world, you have these options. Right. So you can do a program for yourself and go away with it. That is more of a like a facilitated discussion. Then the incubator will have the mentorship and then the accelerator will actually have funding and all of that. So we think that that will actually cover all the targets of women who want to make a difference.
I can't believe this half hour has gone so quickly, but so we're going to have to wrap up pretty soon. But two things. We've got Mackenzie, who is the ex-wife of Bezos, who's giving, you know, already she's given away close to $6 billion in the last, I think it's 14 months. And then we've got Melinda Gates, who I actually know, and her emergence through the foundation into women's issues has grown exponentially over the last few years anyway. And now I believe she's going to make a very, very concerted effort to put her focus there. Okay, how is that going to change what people like you can do?
My shorthand to that is I often say, if you gave me $5 million, I could change the world, literally, because women with money will change everything, right? And again, it's talking about that table, because if you look at the example of the numbers in the past couple of years of women who have gotten funding for their companies, their organizations, the numbers are actually dropping. And it's one of those situations where it's because most of the time they're at a table asking men for money. And before they get that money, they first have to go through this labyrinth of how many babies do they plan to have? And are they actually going to be an effective leader as a woman and all the bullshit that they have to deal with? Whereas if you have a woman sitting at the table writing the check, it's a whole different conversation. So I think the more women who have money to give away and the more women-founded funds, VC funds that exist, that's how we're going to change that. So I think that there's huge potential.
Women are using that exact template in Hollywood. You know, they're putting their own production companies together, whether it's Reese Witherspoon or a number of other women. And they are making great movies, Academy Award winning movies, which means absolutely nothing. But point being, it is happening. And I think what it also says to us, I was married to a very successful investment banker in another life. And I actually left the marriage because I just didn't want to be in it. But we had a big foundation. And every year, he went to Princeton, I went to the University of Nebraska. And every year I'd look at, you know, we're putting money out and we'd give a six-figure number to Princeton and we'd give $1,000 to the University of Nebraska. And
exactly.
You know, Jennifer, I never once said, what?
Yeah.
I never once said, wait, I want to talk to the chair of the women's studies department and I want Nebraskan women to understand there's something bigger than Nebraska possibly out there. In other words, it never occurred to me that I personally, within that marriage, and by the way, he would have said, do whatever you want, I don't care. You know, it's not as if I was fighting to get this. I just never occurred to me. I think more and more women are starting to say, I may not have $1 million to give away, but you can smartly give away $1,000 a year in a way that will make a change.
Exactly.
And if we all did that, you know, so maybe one of the things you can do in your sector is to start to put out information about where you can place smaller amounts of money. You know, it certainly worked for Barack Obama in 2008, you know. So my point is there's a lot we can do. And it's so exciting that you're doing all these things. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
Love to.
Yeah. And as people listen to this, go and take a look, reach out, network, network, network. I think that's one of the key elements in self-empowerment. And I love that as well. So we thank you, but we have to end with our normal question. So get ready.
Okay. I've prepared.
I know. I sent them to her early. I don't always do that, but I did this time. Okay.
I'm a good girl. I need to
know. Excellent work, Jennifer. Okay. What movie represents who you are or where you are going?
Who I am at my core is the Disney version of Beauty and the Beast, because I feel like Belle, and I felt like Belle growing up every day.
Tale as old as time.
Yeah, well, more like the one about her little town with her nose stuck in a book, things like that. So she really resonates with me.
Well, I do a movie review. It's called ScreenThoughts.net. There's two of us and we review films. Actually, that's how I met you. We review films from a female perspective. My favorite Disney film is still Cruella. When I finally saw her when I was 7 on the screen, and we're talking about it in the early 60s, I thought, finally, someone who looks like me, you know? Like she was just disheveled and crazy and, you know, it was great. So I understand that's a great answer, but true as it can be, great answer. So if you're home alone, what is your go-to dinner?
Well, because I have a former life in the world of food, it really depends on my mood. But I will say that it is always served plated as if you would have it in a restaurant with a placemat and a table setting and a cloth napkin, because I really value the pleasure of the food. So sometimes, like last night, it was pecan crusted salmon, but it might also be a short rib burger. So it really depends.
You know, on my Instagram page one night, I think about 10 o'clock at night, I put up an empty container of Häagen-Dazs coffee ice cream with a spoon sticking out of it. And I titled it "Hello, Darkness, My Old Friend," and it's still to this day. We're talking about 5 years ago. To this day, it is the most liked image on my Instagram page.
I'm not surprised.
And I have some pretty cool things on my Instagram page. For me, in the darkness of night, and it depends on my mood. I can do that dinner. I can do that salmon dinner, but I also can do a whole pint, no question about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Or a waffle.
All right, we've added a new one in. Do you swear?
Do I swear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, I just wondered. A lot of people say no, they don't.
Oh, of course I swear.
Okay. And is there a self-help book that changed your life?
Oh, boy. I need to think about that for a second.
I've probably read, I don't know. I mean, I don't usually comment on these questions, but I've probably read, I don't know, 100 self-help books in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And there's only one that changed my life, and that was The Four Agreements. It changed the way I behaved in a way that was so much healthier for myself, you know?
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any one. I mean, I've read a ton of books. And actually, I had so much trouble with this question about a favorite book because I love books. I've loved books since I was tiny. And so I don't have a favorite. It's really hard.
Well, have you read one book more than once?
Yes, I have. And it's interesting. It speaks to such an interesting time in my life. So Atlas Shrugged was my go-to.
I remember that.
Yeah, I actually have an essay in the Literary Companion to Atlas Shrugged. And what I loved about it was the self-determination, right? Because I'm in this realm of self-directed empowerment. And so it really spoke to me about creating one's life from scratch, if you will, because I'm the child of immigrants. So I was taught to create big dreams and go for it kind of thing. And so the entrepreneurship in that book spoke to me a lot. And there's a lot of other things that don't anymore, but that really, it has stayed with me.
Thanks, Jennifer. What a great interview today. I hope you'll come back.
Thank you. I absolutely will.